Good evening. Good evening and welcome to another evening of the Michigan Writers Series. My name is Peter Berg. I'm Assistant Director for Special Collections, and I'm the host for the Michigan Writers Series. I'm delighted that you're here this evening for this reading by Michael Kimball. Before I begin, I'd just like to go over how the Michigan Writers Series works. We've been doing this now for over 10 years, inviting writers with ties to Michigan to come and read in the MSU libraries. We tape all of the readings. We then digitize them and put them up on the internet so that the world can listen to this reading if they so desire. Over the 10 years, we have recorded now, I think, over 100 writers. And so it's quite a website to have, and I hope you will tune into it if you have the opportunity. Michael will read for about 45 or 50 minutes. He then will welcome some questions from the audience. He also has been kind enough to bring his latest book that he will sell and also sign for you, and I'm sure answer some questions if you have any of him at that time as well. So we'll begin the reading, and again, thank you very much for coming out. Michael Kimball was born in Lansing and attended Michigan State University and New York University. He is the author of three novels: The Way the Family Got Away, published in 2000, How Much of Us There Was, published in 2005, and his most recent work, Dear Everybody. All of his work has generated much acclaim, and he has been described as a hero of contemporary fiction. In his novel, Dear Everybody, published simultaneously in the United States, England, and Canada, the novel's main figure, Jonathan Bender, has something to say, but no one will listen. So he writes to everyone he has ever known, including his parents and siblings, childhood friends, classmates and teachers, ex-girlfriends, his ex-wife, the state of Michigan, a television station, and a weather satellite. Taken together, these unsent letters tell a remarkable story of Jonathan's life. Indeed, writers ranging from Stephen King to David Eggers have recognized and recommended Dear Everybody as a must-read. In addition to his writing, Kimball is the founding editor of Taint Magazine. He is also responsible for the art project, Michael Kimball Writes Your Life Story on a Postcard, and the documentary film, I Will Smash You. Currently, he lives in Baltimore. Will you please join me in welcoming Michael Kimball back to campus?
Thank you, Peter. Thank you, everybody, for coming out. I did a taped interview just before this, and one of the things I was talking about was that it was nice to finally come back to Michigan as a writer. I've been back to Michigan lots of times since I left in 1990, usually to see family, but I've never been back as a writer to read my work, and so this was just a nice kind of homecoming. So thank you for inviting me. I'm going to read from Dear Everybody. Peter did a great job describing it. So I'm just going to start reading a few of the letters. This is one of the very early letters. It's from 1967, the year Jonathan was born. Dear Mom and Dad, I didn't know that I was 2 weeks late and that you were waiting for me, but it always made me feel special to know that Ingham County had to send a snowplow out to our house. It always made me feel special to think of Dad driving the car so slowly behind the snowplow, and Mom with her hands on top of her stomach as if I were an important but breakable package. I always thought that there was some important destiny in that for me. I always thought that the path that was cleared through all of that cold and snow was somehow going to determine the rest of my life. Dear Mom and Dad, here's the reason that I pulled the stitching out of my feather pillow and then pulled all of the feathers out of it too. I thought that I was going to find a bird. Dear Mom and Dad, do you remember how I couldn't blow out the candles on my birthday cake even though there were only four of them? Do you remember how they kept lighting back up no matter how hard I blew on them? I started to cry because I didn't think that I would turn 4 years old or that we would eat my birthday cake. I didn't understand that the candles were supposed to be a joke. Dear Mom and Dad, I woke up screaming that one time because of all that eye gunk holding my eyelashes and my eyelids together. I couldn't open my eyes up. I thought that I had gone blind. Dear Mrs. McCoy, I'm sorry that I broke the storm window in your back door with my face. I'm sure that you were a good mom, but I didn't want to stay with you, and my mom left me with you to babysit me. I knew that my mom was going on her first job interview since I had been born, but it wasn't until I was standing inside her yellow kitchen that I realized what it would mean if she got that job. I couldn't stand the idea of my mom leaving me with somebody else for most of the week. I could still see my mom walking down your driveway toward her car, but I didn't realize that there was that storm window between my mom and me and that I was just looking through it. 1973, Dear Easter Bunny. My mom and dad got mad at me because I wouldn't stop looking for Easter eggs around the house and in the backyard. But I thought that you were supposed to come to every kid's house. I was hoping to find those plastic eggs with the candy inside them hidden behind the curtains or in the bushes or in the long grass in the backyard. I thought that there might be jelly beans or marshmallow bunnies or those little yellow or those little chocolate eggs wrapped up in different colored tin foil. You knew that I lived there, right? Dear Kathy Granger, do you remember when I used to stand on the sidewalk outside your house and yell out your name until you came out to play with me? I didn't know that you were just my babysitter and that my mom and dad paid you to watch me. I thought that you really liked me, and not just because I was a cute little boy. I thought that we were going to get married when I was old enough. It's a Michigan one. Dear Mom and Dad, I was just pretending to be asleep in the bed of the station wagon on that drive home from Lake Michigan. I didn't open my eyes up when you shook my shoulder because I wanted one of you to pick me up and carry me into the house and up to bed. Dear Tooth Fairy, I was afraid to pull the loose tooth out of my mouth even though I knew you would bring me a quarter for it if I left it under my pillow. I wanted the quarter, but I was afraid of the blood and I was afraid that I was going to start losing all of my teeth and that they wouldn't grow back and that I would have to get fake ones like Grandpa Bender did. 1974. Dear Grandma and Grandpa Winters, thank you for giving me the Etch-a-Sketch for my 7th birthday. I liked drawing with it better than drawing on the walls, but I always felt sick when I shook it and everything on its magic screen disappeared. It reminded me of how my dad would grab me by both of my shoulders and shake me until everything went blank inside of me, too. Dear Robert, do you remember when we saw Planet of the Apes on television? I remember that I had difficulty separating the apes in the movie from the gorillas that I would sometimes hear about on the evening news. I knew that we were fighting a war then, but I didn't know that you could spell gorillas that way or that when you did, it referred to people. I knew that gorillas were apes, but I didn't know that gorillas and gorillas were different things. I didn't understand why everybody wasn't as afraid as I was. I did an interview a little bit ago, and somebody asked me what the most autobiographical moment in the novel was. And I could have picked a few, but this is the one I picked. Dear Scott Poore, oh, also, it was actually in self-defense, just to get that out there. And there are more people than are mentioned in the piece I'm going to read. So, Dear Scott Poore, I'm not sorry that I hit you over the head with my Scooby-Doo lunchbox and cracked your head open with it. You were a lot bigger than I was then, and I was afraid of you, and I wanted you and your brother to stop picking on me on the way home from school. But here's what I want to know. Did the doctor show you what it looked like inside your head? If he did, I bet it looked mean. He really was a bully. And it was him and his little brother, and he had two really big sisters too, so. Dear Mom and Dad, I wore that crown from Burger King for most of the summer of 1975 because I really thought that I was the Burger King. It couldn't have been anybody else. Nobody else was wearing a crown. Dear Dad, I know that you were watering the lawn so that the grass would grow, and I know that me running through the sprinklers got the lawn all muddy and sloppy, but I wasn't doing it because it was fun or because I wanted to make you angry. I was doing it because I was so skinny and short. I thought that the water falling on me might help me to grow. Dear Dad, there are a fair amount of Dad letters in here. Dear Dad, do you remember that time our house almost burned down? It was me who did it. I took the newspaper that you hadn't read yet, and I stole the matches from the pocket of one of your jackets, and I started a fire with them in the bushes that were next to the house. I thought that it was going to be more than a regular burning fire, though, and I still don't understand why God didn't appear in the flames of the burning bushes to talk to me. That isn't how it happened in the Bible, and I had some questions I wanted to ask. Dear Aunt Linda, I liked getting the mail that you sent me, even if it was a chain letter, but I didn't send it off to the 9 other people like the letter said. I couldn't see how the chain letter would know that it was me who broke it or how that would bring us bad luck. I could not have known that Uncle Kenny was going to get drunk and drive into a telephone pole and die in a car accident because of it. As a kid, I actually had an uncle die in a car accident, and there was always this story around it. And that, what I just read, is the story that I always thought was true. Afterward, I asked my mother about it, and apparently, besides the fact that he died, none of it was true. So, memory can do odd things. Dear secret admirer, thank you for giving me the Valentine on Valentine's Day that asked me if I would be your Valentine. I would have been. I wanted to be, but I couldn't ever figure out who you were. Dear Dad, they taught us in our sex ed class that a baby lives inside its mother for 9 months. So I counted the 9 months back from my birthday, added on the 2 weeks that I was late, and figured out that I must have been conceived around your birthday, which means that one of your birthday presents turned out to be me. Happy birthday, Dad. Dear Blue Oldsmobile, I don't know if you saw me or not. I don't know if you meant to hit me or not, but it really hurt when you did it. I wish that you could have thrown yourself in reverse and turned back for a few minutes. Maybe then you would have thought about what you were doing and you never would have hit me. Then I never would have been knocked to the ground and broken my arm and broken my bike too. Did I at least dent your fender or scratch the paint on you? I hope so. Dear Stephen Wilson, do you remember how you would come up behind me and knock my books out of my hand and then knock me down when I bent down to pick them up? I do. I still do. I was still afraid of you even after we graduated from high school and I went away to college to learn about the weather and you went away to jail for armed robbery. When I think about it, it reminds me of some of the stuff that my dad used to do to me. I never knew when any of it was going to happen. Dear Dr. Fritsch, I cried when you told me that I had a cavity because I didn't want you to drill a hole inside of one of my teeth and then fill it back in with some kind of metal. I hated the idea that I was already beginning to rot. Dear Waverly High School, I know that I should have attended you more than I did, but I also want you to know that it wasn't you. It was the other people you had inside you. I saw what they did to your windows and doors and hallways and classrooms. I saw how mean they were to you, too. Dear Dr. Adler, that test that you asked me to take knew how I felt. I did feel blue. I did feel sad. I did feel bored most of the time. But here's what I need to know. When I feel happy, what color will that be? Because I know that the red pills are supposed to make me feel better. But I stopped taking them because they were red and they made the whole world blurry. Sometimes I would start to shake even when I wasn't afraid of anything. Other times, I couldn't think or I didn't know where I was. And one time, those red pills gave me red spots on my skin that made me feel prickly and hot. I thought that I'd set myself on fire. Dear Waverly High School, class of 1985, I don't know how many of you recognized me at the start of the school year in 1982. I had new clothes and a new haircut, and I felt like a new person. That's why I asked everybody to call me JT instead of Jonathan. I wanted to be the new kid. I wanted to start over and fit in and have everybody like me. Dear Michael J. Fox or Alex P. Keaton, I didn't like your television show even though everybody at school talked about how funny it was. I didn't think that it was funny and I didn't believe that it was true that anybody's family could get along like that. I know that television is made up, but it should at least be believable. I mean, we were supposed to be about the same age, so how could our lives be so different? Dear Dad, thank you for buying the case of beer for me and my friends. I know that you were just doing it because you and Mom were separated. You were probably hoping that I might like you more because of it, but I didn't. I just wanted the beer. Dear Jolene Curtis, I liked playing tennis with you during that one summer. It was fun to say the score at the start of the game, love, love, and I think that it could mean something else. It wasn't just me saying it. You said it too. It was strange when we went back to school in the fall and I saw you in the hallway between classes. I wanted to talk to you, but I didn't feel as if you wanted to talk to me. You looked so different in your school clothes from your tennis outfits, and I must have too. Was that what happened? Did we just not recognize each other anymore? Dear Dad, I didn't lose control of your car on a patch of ice like I said. I got into that car accident that dented the back fender on purpose. The only thing that I'm sorry about is that I drove back home and told you what happened. I should have just driven away from the accident and away from home and never come back. I knew what you were going to do to me when you asked me about your car before you asked me about me. Anyway, I wasn't hurt by the accident until you picked me up and threw me up against the living room wall. I still get headaches there at the back of my head where it put a dent into the drywall. Dear Dad, thank you for letting me take your car out again after you got it fixed at the body shop, but I wasn't trying to get you into trouble with Mom. I didn't know that Megan O'Malley had left her panties under the passenger seat or that Mom would find them there and think that you were having another affair. I knew that Megan had taken them off because I had helped her do it, but I didn't realize that she hadn't put them back on. One of the things I had the most fun writing, there's a two-page spread that is yearbook quotes. It was a lot of fun to write. JT, remember the time that we spilled acid on the lab floor to see if it would burn through Mrs. Bernard's class, but the linoleum just turned a funny color and we got detention? That was cool. JT, to a really good friend who helped me cheat in algebra class, have a good summer and keep on running. JT, have a great summer and try not to die in a freak car accident where you get decapitated like Tim Thompson did. JT, I hate you so much. I can't believe you broke up with me last year. Love, Dana West. JT, you're kind of strange sometimes, but you're cute too, and that makes up for it. Didn't you ever want to make out with me? I bet you do now. This is the last one. JT, I know I shouldn't break up with you in your yearbook, but we were going to different colleges in the fall, so I think we should end it now. It will be so much more painful if we wait until August to do it. Love, Megan O'Malley. Dear Megan Fitzgerald, I didn't mean to be so mean to you when I broke up with you at the end of the summer. I shouldn't have told you that I only dated you because you had the same first name as Megan O'Malley and I wanted to pretend that you were her. I should have lied. That would have been nicer. Dear David Vaughn, I'm sorry that I threw up on your towel in the bathroom that we shared. I never meant to drink that much or get so drunk that I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't want to get in a fight with you either. Didn't you know that Judy Butler had just broken up with me and that my insides were already a mess? I wouldn't have punched you in the stomach if you hadn't kept yelling at me about your stupid towel. That's also why I started dating Carol McAnallen after she broke up with you. I wanted you to feel as bad as I did. Dear Mom and Dad, I know that I disappointed you again when I told you that I wasn't going to major, that I was going to major in earth sciences. But I've always been interested in the weather, and I decided that I wanted to be a weatherman. I know that you always wanted me to be something else. I know that you didn't think that I would ever get a job, but that's why I minored in communications, so that I could work in television. I was trying to make myself marketable, and I already knew that I was good at forecasting. 1987. Dear Amanda Vandermeer, I know that we had only known each other for a weekend when I asked you to move in with me, but that weekend was the best 2 days of my life up to then, and we both needed somewhere to live next year. You seemed so perfect to me then, and I think that I did to you, too. I didn't want to live half of the next year in your apartment and half of it in mine. I wanted us to be in the same place as much as we could. I wanted to be with you so much that I didn't even want to sleep. Remember how we stayed up the whole first night talking and touching? Remember how we used up that 3-pack of condoms and in the morning we had to go to the corner store for more of them? Remember how we both quit work that next week so that we didn't have anything else to do except to be together? We both took out more student loans and moved into that little one-bedroom apartment that was off campus. We slept on a mattress on the floor and had sheets for curtains, and we were so happy. Our furniture was furniture that other people were throwing out. We had those two chairs that were mismatched because one of them was yours and one of them was mine. We had that love seat that we found on the sidewalk and carried four blocks back to our apartment. I loved that furniture and that summer and you. I wish that I could meet you again right now and that we could be at the beginning of something again. Dear anybody, I was afraid to leave my apartment. I didn't want Amanda to come back and me not be there. The only people I talked to were the people who answered the telephone when I called to order food, and the only times I opened the door were to pay for the food when it was delivered. I stopped taking showers because I was afraid that I might not hear Amanda knock on the door when I was under the water. I wore the same clothes over and over again after it became too difficult to decide if my shirt matched my pants, and eventually I became used to the smell of myself. Before long, it became difficult to move, so I mostly stayed on the love seat. Sometimes I sat up and sometimes I laid down. I noticed when it was day and when it was night by how much light came into the room around the edges of the sheets that I kept pulled closed over the windows. Sometimes I laid my head on the armrest, and that made me think of Amanda holding me. I was so tired. Have you ever felt that way too? Dear landlord at Cedar Village Apartments, that's still here, right? Dear landlord at Cedar Village Apartments, I'm so glad that you let yourself into my apartment with your master key. I knew that some time had passed, but I didn't know how much. I didn't realize that it was 1988 or that January had passed and the new semester of classes had already started. I didn't realize that I hadn't paid the rent or that I didn't even have enough money to pay the rent. If you hadn't found me, then I might not ever have left my apartment. I was so afraid of anything outside of me. I felt as if I had cracked somewhere inside me, and even though I wrapped my arms around my legs and tried to hold on to myself, the crack kept getting taller and wider until there was an opening where you could see through me if you looked at me. Even now, I can feel that opening getting bigger inside of me, and pretty soon I will disappear inside of it. Dear man who looked at me through a face-sized window every half hour, I know that you were just looking in on me to make sure that I wasn't trying to kill myself. I know that you were just checking to see that I was still alive at 1:30, at 2, at 2:30, etc. But I liked seeing your face in that little window, and I started to wait for you to appear. I found it reassuring. Dear Mom and Dad, I know that you had to sell the house when you got divorced. I know that you couldn't just split the rooms up or do a timeshare or anything like that, but I don't think that you should have sold it to that young couple. The same thing was going to happen to them. Dear Greater Lansing Herald Want Ads, do you remember when I used to look at you every day? I used to circle some of your job listings and then make phone calls or send out resumes. I always thought that I was going to find my future by reading you, but I couldn't ever figure out what you wanted me to do. Dear State of Michigan, moving away from you that fall after college was easier than trying to run away when I was little. I had a car by then and could drive. 1991, Dear Tornado. I don't know if you'll remember me, but I was the guy who was chasing you in his car. You kept cutting across all those empty fields, and I kept driving through all those stop signs out on those country roads. I was trying to get close enough to you to shoot you with my video camera. I was trying to get footage that was good enough to show on television. I was using you to get an interview at a television station. Plus, I thought that if I kept chasing you, then you would eventually die out and leave everybody alone. Anyway, thanks. I got the job. Dear ESPN, thank you for airing all of those baseball games on television. I used to come home late after a news broadcast and watch the West Coast games when nearly everybody else in my part of the world was sleeping. Watching all of those people gathered together in those stadiums always made me feel as if I were part of something grand. 1992, Dear Weather Satellite. I didn't know many people when I first moved to Jefferson City. That's why I used to watch you blinking your way across the sky at night. It made me think that you were winking at me, and that made me think that we were friends. That's why I climbed up onto the roof of my apartment building every night to look for you, even if it was cold, even if there were clouds. I was comforted to know that you were still traveling in your orbit around me. Dear Sarah, one of the things that I liked about you was the way that you would stop to pet the dog that somebody else had left tied up outside of a restaurant or a grocery store. You always made me feel better about being abandoned by other people, too. 1993, Dear Sarah, thank you for moving into my apartment and living there with me. I needed somebody else to sit on the couch and the chairs with me. I needed somebody else to watch the television with me. I needed somebody else to eat at the kitchen table with me. I needed somebody else to put their clothes in the dresser drawers in the closet with my clothes. Dear old woman, I don't know if you are still alive or if you will remember me if you are, but you were sitting one table away from me in the Main Street diner, and you seemed to close your right eye every time I looked at you. I thought that you probably recognized me from the television and that you were winking at me, but then I realized that you couldn't help it. I realized that you had had a stroke and that you weren't, and that you couldn't really move that side of your face. I wish that you really would have been winking at me, though, and I wish that all of me worked, too. Dear Sarah, 1994, Dear Sarah, I know that I often acted overwhelmed with work, but that's only because I was. The atmosphere was exerting a pressure of up to 40,000 pounds on me, and I had to work really hard to use the body pressure that I had inside me to keep myself from collapsing on myself. Dear Sarah, do you remember that old mattress that we slept on when we first met, the one that sagged in the middle? I always liked the way that we would roll over into the middle of the bed in the middle of the night and roll into each other. I always liked the way that we woke up in the morning, how we had to work extra hard to separate ourselves and get out of bed. We never should have gotten a new bed after we got married. Dear Sarah, do you remember how we stained our expensive new couch by having sex on it right after it was delivered? Do you remember how we had to turn the cushion over to hide it? I turned the cushion back over after you left me and left me with the couch. It reminded me of how excited by each other that we once were. That makes me think of how much you wanted to have children. I did too. That's why I was always disappointed when your period came every month. I have always thought of all of that blood as one of my failures. I really thought that we were going to have one kid and then another kid. I thought that the kids would get bigger and that we would eventually move into a bigger house. I thought that our kids would have kids and we would become grandparents together. I thought that we would retire and then take care of each other. I never expected so much of that to never happen to us. Do you know that we never developed the film from our vacation to the Grand Canyon? I just found the camera a few days ago and the roll of film inside it wasn't finished, but I got it developed anyway. They were almost all photos of us with the canyon behind us, and we were almost always smiling. Do you remember? We were happy. Unfortunately, the Photoshop also processed the unused film at the end of the roll, so the last few photos are all just black, which made me realize that they were actually photos of all of the things that we never did together. 1996. Dear Sarah, sometimes I wonder if I should have patched that crack in the wall of the foundation. Sometimes I wonder what would have happened if our house had really flooded. Maybe we could have started our marriage over again. I want you to know that I always tried to keep us dry. I tried to patch the leaking roof of our new old house. I can't even remember how many times I went up there. The buckets of tar, the new metal flashing and matching shingles. I don't know why nothing worked, especially since I was the weatherman, and I should have had enough influence over the snow and rain to keep you dry. I really was trying to keep the bad weather off us. You knew that, right? Dear Sarah, I smashed the television screen with a hammer because I thought that it was watching us. Even when it was off, I could see this faint reflection of somebody in the screen. Also, I unplugged the radio because I thought that it was listening to me and broadcasting everything that I thought outside my head. But even after I unplugged the radio, I could still hear them talking. That's why I threw the radio outside in the rain where it probably got electrocuted. What I'm trying to say is thank you for holding on to me so tightly when I couldn't hold on to myself anymore. Sometimes I can still feel your arms around me trying to hold me still. 1997, Dear Sarah, I'm sorry that I stopped coming to bed at night and started sleeping on the couch with the television on. I liked it when the local television station went off the air and all that static came on. It blurred how badly I felt. Dear 917 Ionia Street, I don't know if you recognized me since I was just a little boy when my mom and dad sold you in 1971, but I drove back to Michigan to see you. That was me all grown up sitting in the car that was idling across the street. I was looking for some of my childhood and I thought that you might know where it is. Dear Brown Squirrel, I'm sorry that I ran over you with my car. I thought that you were going to stay on the other side of the road. I didn't expect you to double back on yourself. Dear Sarah, I didn't answer the telephone when you called because I had stopped talking to anybody but myself. But thank you for leaving the message about our divorce papers on the answering machine. I've been playing it over and over ever since you left it. Not the whole message, just the part where you say, "Hello, Jonathan. It's me, Sarah. It reminds me of when we first met." Last one, 1999. Dear Sarah, I didn't sign the divorce papers because I wanted to be married to you for as long as I could. I was even hoping that you wouldn't be able to divorce me if I didn't sign them at all. You didn't have to go to a judge to prove that I was unfit for marriage. But since we really are divorced now, I want I think that we should split up our memories too. I want the time when we met and the time when we went to the Grand Canyon. You can have our first date and the day we got married. You can also have the day when you left me, which I have no use for. I want when we moved in together and when we bought our house, though. And I want all the times that we sat on the couch and watched television together. You can have the times we ate breakfast together, but I want most of the dinners. There are a lot more. Maybe we should talk about all of them. Thank you. If anybody has questions, I'm happy to try and answer them.
Yeah, sure. What's your longest one?
Longest letter? There's a longish letter that is at the front of the novel, and it's dated 1999, the year of his suicide, and it sets the scene, so to speak. It's partly where the title comes from. It begins, "Dear Everybody," and he's imagining everybody he's ever known. There are a lot of names listed. You get a place for him. He's sitting in his kitchen writing these letters, and so there's the idea that he's writing these letters in one long sitting or in a couple of days, but just sort of it's this one isolated episode at the end of his life when he's doing this thing, and then the novel moves into his early years and goes forward until it meets 1999 at the end of the novel. So, and there are letters that are short, there are one-line letters, there are short letters like the feather pillow and the bird letter, and like there's a one long angry letter to his father in the middle that I didn't read because it's really kind of angry and doesn't fit unless you've heard more of what's happened in the novel. So there's some that length. But the majority of the letters are a third of a page. Is that me? No. Anyway. So most of them are really short, and I was really working with the idea of how do you take all of these fragments, how do you take all of these isolated pieces and construct a life out of it. And then that longish first letter, he has a line where he says, I think that these were my defining moments. And so he's trying to remember the most important times to him, and so that's what each instance of the letter is, the episodes that he thinks brought him to this point in his life. No, go ahead, sure. No, ask.
Was any of this sort of the shortness new to you, the brevity of the some of the forms?
Yeah, I tried to write, the novel's made up of almost 400 separate fragments, and I tried to write each piece, whether it was a letter, whether it was something else, as if it were its own self-contained thing, but also as if in some way it added to the story. It added more story, it advanced the narrative in some way. And so I had never, my first novel was actually every chapter initially was one long paragraph. I never wanted to break anything up. I just wanted it to be one continuous thing. And so this was just it was a whole different thing for me. With each book, I've tried to do something different. The first book was narrated by children. The second book is mostly narrated by an older man. And so this was just a whole different, you know, way to approach telling a story, for me anyway. I mean, other people have written epistolary novels, of course. They've been doing this for hundreds of years, every once in a while. It doesn't happen a lot. But I was also trying to take the letter and do something different with the letter. If you look at 18th century novels that are epistolary, they will begin with, dear such and such, and they will have the ending, sincerely yours, or whatever it is. But all of the text in the middle, you could basically take the front and the end off an epistolary novel from an epistolary piece from an 18th century novel, and it would be description just like any other 18th century novel. That's a bit of a generalization, but I was trying to take the letter and do something a little different with it. Mm-hmm. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking Marilynne Robinson's second novel was to one person. All of it is directed to his son, I believe.
What's it called? I remember. I can't think of
Juliet.
What it. Okay. Right. So, this is. It's a similar idea, but directed at everybody. And there were very distinct versions of the novel. For a long time, the main body was just letters. After I had some of the narrative frame, the introduction from his brother, a chronology, the last will and testament that's at the end, after I had some of that, the interior of the novel opened in a different way. And it allowed me to do anything at a point. Once his brother was the person assembling all of these things, which is what the introduction is about, anything could become part of the novel. So that's where the yearbook quotes came from. There are weather reports, the psychological evaluations, newspaper clippings, all sorts of things, all just to try and find a different way to advance the story. So. Anybody else? Thank you for coming out. There are a few books up here, or if you brought a book, I'm happy to sign it. So, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.